Manx Radio's update with Beth Espy.
Well, first of all, good evening. Welcome to the programme here on Manx Radio, where before 5.30 we'll take you through some of the main news stories today. And one of the things we'll be doing is talking to the father over here whose son died of meningitis in 2023. He has a plea for parents regarding vaccination after the death of two students from meningitis in the UK. Also today in Tynwald, the Health Minister said Nobles Hospital was currently operating on a bed capacity that exceeds the industry's recognised safe levels. We'll hear more about that in a couple of minutes. And we'll be speaking live to the Trade Union Assistant General Secretary of the Head Teachers Union about whistleblowing. All that, the weather, the traffic and the travel. And if you'd like to get in touch, text 166 177. We'll start with a roundup of the main news headlines first with Amy Fastamai.
The Health Minister says Nobles Hospital is currently operating on a bed capacity that exceeds the industry recognised safe levels. Claire Christian's been responding to an urgent Tynwald question after the Medical Staff Committee highlighted a critical shortfall in inpatient capacity, claiming it posed a direct risk to people's lives.
The bed occupancy for the current financial year stands at 86.9%. Internationally recognised safe operating levels is 85%.
Parents on the Isle of Man are being encouraged to make sure their children have received all available meningitis vaccinations. It's after an outbreak in the UK in which two young people have died and several others are in hospital. Brett Martin's 21-year-old son Lucas died from the disease in 2023.
Please, vaccination to the max. You're never going to stop your youngsters from maybe doing things you might not want them to do. The best way of remediating the situation is to be vaccinated to the maximum possible degree.
The Chief Minister says the government is monitoring the conflict in the Middle East with great concern. Alfred Cannon told Tynwald the Economic Strategy Board will now meet weekly to assess impacts on energy prices, supply chains and the wider economy. Turning to international news now, and students in university halls in Kent are to be offered the meningitis B vaccine as an outbreak in the county grows. 15 cases have now been confirmed, with two people dying. Pharmacies are warning of supply constraints because of a surge in demand for jabs. Donald Trump's reacted to the resignation of his former counter-terrorism chief, saying it's a good thing he's out. Joe Kent's quit, saying he cannot in good faith support the Iran war and blamed the conflict on pressure from Israel. And a £10 million lottery prize will be given to charity unless it's claimed within 2 weeks. Bosses say no one's come forward in 5 months. Those are your headlines. I'll be back with the news in full at 6.
Thank you very much indeed, Amy. Now the weather brought to you by Manx Glass and Glazing. It's been pretty cloudy but dry today, and for the rest of the day it's going to be quite windy in the north. Maximum temperatures around 12 Celsius if you can still find any sunshine before that sun goes down. Tomorrow, areas of cloud to start with, mainly dry again. It is going to improve as the day goes on. Sunny spells developing and top temperatures of around 14.
Manx Glass and Glazing are now stocking Omnia flush sash frames. See the range at the showroom on the Stubbridge Trading Estate.
You're listening to Update, 3:30 past 5. Well, as we just heard there, the Health Minister has admitted Nobles Hospital is currently operating on a bed capacity that exceeds the industry-recognised safe level. So Claire Christian's been responding to an urgent Tynwald question after the Medical Staff Committee highlighted what they called a critical shortfall in inpatient capacity, claiming it posed a direct risk to people's lives. Ms Christian says bed capacity at the hospital was 314 when it first opened in 2003, but in 2025, that had reduced to 233. She insisted today her department was committed to addressing the concerns that had been raised by the doctors.
On occasions where demand has been high, the day procedure suite has been kept open overnight to provide additional temporary bed capacity. The establishment of an intermediate care service in 2024 has also enabled more care to be delivered in the community, reducing the number of medically fit patients occupying acute hospital beds from an average of 23 to 5. In addition, the senior medical workforce within the acute medical unit has been strengthened, enabling more consistent 7-day coverage and improving patient flow. A front door frailty model has also been introduced with a consultant geriatrician based in the emergency department to avoid unnecessary admissions. Manx Care has also secured additional external capacity through the purchase of nursing home beds for patients who are medically fit to leave hospital but are awaiting onward care arrangements. Work is ongoing to formalise the commissioning of both nursing home beds and home care packages, supporting the development of a discharge to assess model. This will allow patients to be transferred out of acute setting while financial and care assessments are completed. The redevelopment of the emergency department has been identified as a priority for capital investment due to its restrictive size and layout, and this is currently with our colleagues in Treasury and SACIC. But we do appreciate that this is a long way off completion. Significantly, Manx Care have also been able to advise that they will be implementing an interim 12 new space emergency department clinic decisions unit, which is scheduled to open by the end of April. Manx Care continues to monitor the bed occupancy closely. They have informed us that the bed occupancy for the current financial year stands at 86.9%. Internationally recognised safe operating levels is 85%, and the department acknowledges we need to support Manx Care to achieve this safe operating level. The number of 314 beds is a historical figure from when Nobles Hospital opened in 2003. In the 2017-18 Nobles Hospital annual report, it cites 240 beds. And currently there are 233 beds. We must work together to bring the bed occupancy down to safe levels of 85%. This is an urgent issue and it is receiving attention it deserves. Every bed needs resourcing in people terms, in equipment terms, in procedure terms, and the decision to adjust bed and ward space is a complex and costly matter. The approach to having beds available is also set against strengthening a home-first approach so that patients receive care in the most appropriate setting. I remain committed to delivering these improvements necessary to ensure safe and high quality care for our island community.
That's the Health Minister, Claire Christian. Well, the person who put that urgent question to her was Onkin MHK Julie Edge. Phil Gorn's been catching up with her to find out what she made of that response.
So I felt it was important. The main issue for me, and I was following up really, was the bed capacity and how that's reduced since Manx Care. And it's not something that they've not known about. Why have we reached crisis point that our doctors are speaking out for the safety of the patients and the public of the Isle of Man? And that's what it's all about. It's the public safety.
Were you convinced by the answers the minister gave? Because the minister, well, there seems to be significant discrepancy in what the doctors are saying and what Manx Care seems to be telling the minister.
And that was my challenge, really, that the public of the Isle of Man have lost complete confidence in the Manx Care board because we get so many different responses to data, and I'm beginning to wonder if they even know how many themselves. But certainly, up through a series of questions I've already been asking since 2024, the numbers have changed. I've had to challenge numbers and then they change them again. And it does seem that there's nobody overall responsible for that patient bed flow management, which is what the doctors also talked about. And, you know, if somebody comes in through the door at Nobles and they may need a bed, somebody should know there's beds available or not and what that, you know, what they do in those situations. My written answer was very clear, and of 8 months in the year of 2025, the hospital was not within safe bed limits, and I think that's significant.
That's the Onkin MHK Julie Edge there. 8.5 minutes past five. The father of a 21-year-old on the Isle of Man who died from meningitis in 2023 is urging parents to make sure their children have every possible vaccination against the disease. So this follows the death of two young people in the UK. The outbreak has also left at least 15 people in hospital. Four of those cases so far have been confirmed as Men B. Brett Martin says his heart goes out to the families of those who've died and told me how meningitis can be prevalent among older teenagers.
University is a hotbed for the spread of the disease, and it's the most vulnerable point that youngsters have in their lifetime, really. So yeah, it's awful. It's awful that it's not just an isolated case, but there's actually a number of people who've been affected by this. You know, and I My heart goes out to the families who have lost their young sons and daughters.
And understandably, there is a lot of concern. I mean, we've seen it on the social media over here, both for people who've got children that age who are maybe over here, but particularly if they've got children who are away at university. What would you say to them?
Well, the one thing which struck me hard about this particular outbreak is that it's meningitis B that's the cause. And meningitis B is the one vaccine that is not given to children of the cohort who are now university age. So it was brought in 2015. So all babies now will have it, and all children from 2015 onwards will be vaccinated. So that will see the cohort, the university cohort of 2033, who will be covered. But all the cohorts in between times are not automatically covered. You can get the vaccine, the MenB vaccine. It's cost about £150-£200 privately, but there's not a widespread understanding of that. It's not something that we knew as a family. It's not something that seems to be advertised by government in the UK or here. And I'm sure lots of parents would choose to have their child vaccinated with the MenB if they knew about it. So, you know, one of the reasons I was really keen to come on today was to push that point locally. And say, for goodness sake, you know, if you can afford it and you've got a kid who's either in the last stages of school or has gone to university, please consider having the MenB vaccine.
That is Brett Martin there. Well, obviously, it's really worrying for parents on the Isle of Man, especially if your child is away at university. Dr. Matt Tyra is the Director of Public Health, and he's also the Chief Medical Officer to the Isle of Man Government. He has this message.
I think the single most important thing for your listeners is that meningitis is hard to spread. It's a relatively heavy bacteria that requires prolonged contact with somebody, and it's carried in the back of people's throats. So things like coughing and sneezing might be the kind of things that help to transmit it, but also kissing. I know that sharing vapes has been mentioned, but essentially, you know, you're talking about contact with their saliva or the fluids in their mouth and throat, which isn't something that happens too easily. You have to have quite a lot of close contact with somebody to pass it from person to person. It's not like the light viruses, colds or flus, where if you sneeze, it spreads out a long distance. This isn't like that. It's a short distance that it spreads. So the risk of it spreading from person to person is already low. So the risk to the island as a whole is very low indeed, because this isn't something which spreads in the same way as other infectious diseases.
That is Dr. Matt Tyra. We're going to have much more on this in Breakfast tomorrow. We'll also be able to find out much more on the website as well. 5:12. So on yesterday's programme, we heard claims from the School Leaders Union that concerns raised by its members are frequently being overlooked or ignored when it comes to whistleblowing. So this is as the Tim Ward Select Committee on the Whistleblowing Policy Implementation continues its investigation. Well, we're joined on the line now by Rob Kelsall, who's the Assistant General Secretary of the National Association of Head Teachers. Good evening, Mr. Kelsall. First of all, what are your school leaders telling you about how whistleblowing works in practice? And is there an implication that they don't feel safe speaking out?
Thanks for having me on the programme, Beth. And absolutely. School leaders across the Isle of Man have been raising concerns both directly with the union and, of course, with their employer, specifically over a period from July of 2024 to indeed the current point of time. And what we've often seen is that those complaints, having been raised within the department, are often then ignored or siloed or pushed back down the chain. And indeed, when members have gone beyond that in terms of raising matters then with the PSC, and indeed with the Chief Minister, it seems again that those complaints have been pushed down, back down into the department for the department to work within. And that clearly is not a fair or an appropriate or transparent system. And we welcome certainly the Select Committee's work on this important piece of work in terms of ensuring that there is confidence in that whistleblowing and reporting mechanisms across government.
I suppose so. It's important to define what whistleblowing actually is in this context, isn't it? And what it is, as opposed to what perhaps could be perceived sometimes as just a general gripe.
Of course. I mean, there are legal definitions of what a whistleblowing complaint is derived of. But often those whistleblowing complaints can be a combination of both grievances and complaints that are raised by individuals that seem to get no traction or buy-in with the relevant department. And of course, when people sense or feel that their complaints are being covered up or being dismissed, or they're being denied that justice, of course, that again just feeds what essentially is then concerns about transparency and accountability within the system. So there has to be here, we believe, some rebuilding of confidence and trust in the current policies and procedures that apply when it comes to whistleblowing, and serious concerns that are raised by employees, by parents, and again, across different departments of government.
Well, just finally, if you could briefly just talk us through this review that you've proposed, how do you see that working?
Well, of course, through the Select Committee, we've submitted evidence and we're awaiting giving evidence in person to that inquiry. Our view is, of course, at the moment that chief officers seem to operate across government in silos, and currently there is no proper oversight in terms of concerns raised within departments and how that is dealt with by government. So what we're looking for there is some formal whistleblowing policies that has that independent scrutiny, which will ensure that there's a rebuilding of trust and a credible process for anyone who've got concerns to come forward without fear of any reprisals in doing so.
Assistant General Secretary of the National Association of Head Teachers, Rob Kelsall, thank you for being with us. I should say at this point, we have invited the Department of Education to comment on the union's claims.
Manx Radio Travel, serviced by Quayside Tyres.
Nothing specific to report on the roads. Lots of roadworks around, as we know. Looking at the airport, all looking okay down there. And at the steam packet, the Manxman due in around about 5:30, heading out for Heysham again at 7:15.
Manx Radio Travel, driven by Quayside.
Quayside, 664417.
Head to Quayside Tyres and Service Centre on South Quay Industrial Estate.
Quayside!
It's 16 minutes past five. Well, it is Tynwald time. The Chief Minister delivered a statement in Tynwald this morning on the potential impact of the conflict in the Middle East, especially on things like energy prices and the wider economy. It's obviously something that is causing a great deal of concern. Our political correspondent Christian Jones is down in the chamber joining us now. Fastamai, Christian, what's the latest you can tell us on this? Not a lot, it seems. Maybe we'll come back to Christian in a moment. Now, the chair of the planning committee says while he isn't happy with parts of the Lord Street development plans, he thinks overall it's a great scheme. Yesterday, the 12-storey multi-purpose development was granted approval by the board. And as part of that, it was agreed that commuted sums to affordable housing and public open spaces will be capped at £1.1 million and £473,000, respectively. Rob Callister says the redevelopment of the site after 20 years would replace an eyesore in the capital with economic activities, jobs and a renewed sense of pride.
Being the chair of planning is probably one of the most difficult roles an MHK can undertake, because everything is done publicly, everything's done where everybody has an opinion. But if you actually look at this particular site, it has been laid empty for over 20 years. It is not an easy site to get developed. I personally believe the plan that's currently being proposed is better than the 2018 plans that were approved. However, there are elements of this that I don't agree with, but I think overall it will start. We'll start to see change within our capital that's desperately needed, and we'll start to see investment. We also have to remember that this particular site, if it does come to fruition, will bring real measurable economic benefit to the island, and that includes construction jobs, apprenticeships, long-term employment opportunities. And we also have to remember it will bring in, you know, tax revenue for the island government as well, which is much needed. Obviously, there's questions around affordable housing. And one of the things that the planning committee did yesterday was to seriously look at this gross development value. It was right to bring that down to 17.5%. And I'm hoping by doing that, we will actually achieve the commuted sum that this application should pay. And that may not be invested in this particular project, but that money will be very much well used in other parts of the island to deliver the affordable housing that the island needs. as I say, this has all got to go through subject to an appeal and possibly a petition don't. We don't know what's going to happen. So I do have to be careful. But what normally happens is the fact is it's got 19 conditions attached to this application. There's also what's called a Section 13 agreement. And in this, there is a trigger to activate a financial review of the scheme. And there's I was looking for three sort of triggers during this development, but I've accepted, you know, two. And one of those will be an early review, and that trigger will be activated if there hasn't been substantial development within 2 years. And the second one will happen at a later stage in order to ensure that we are trying to get the commuted sum that this scheme should pay. And that would be triggered when 75% of the residential units have been sold, let or occupied. If this site was easy to develop, it would have been done 20 years ago. It is probably going to be the highest building in the capital. But if you go back over 200 years, at some point, the capital of our island has had to build something which is seen as the tallest building within it. I'm not happy with parts of it, but I think overall, this is a great scheme.
That was Rob Callister there. He's the chair of the planning committee talking about that Lord Street development. I'm pleased to say, I think we've fixed the Timwald gremlins. I'm not calling you a Timwald gremlin, Christian, just so you know. But we're talking about this statement that the Chief Minister delivered this morning. What's the latest on that? What can you tell us?
Yeah, so fast away, Beth. So effectively, the Chief Minister gave a statement today about the situation in the Middle East. It was one of a kind of caution, also some reassurance. The Chief Minister says ministers are closely monitoring the situation, especially fuel prices, energy supply, and the wider economy. He says there's no threat to supply chains at the moment, so goods are still arriving as normal.
I mean, energy costs, undoubtedly something many of us are concerned about. What are we hearing about that?
Yeah, absolutely. As we know, that fuel and energy markets are very volatile, and any conflicts or escalations in the Middle East generally tend to affect the energy market quite quickly. What we know, though, is Manx Utilities says the island is largely protected in the short term because of something called hedging. So when gas prices rose sharply recently, the island wasn't fully exposed. Hedging effectively locks in units of energy for a pre-agreed price. So when gas prices jump from around 77 pence to as much as 170 pence per therm, that wouldn't have had as bigger impact on the island as it might have done if hedging hadn't been done.
So is there still, though, some longer term concern?
Well, as with all things, you can only hedge so far ahead. So it's difficult to predict how long any conflict could last. Oil prices like petrol and diesel, those are more exposed to global markets. So the longer conflicts are being seen to continue, that would naturally start to push costs up.
And Christian, did we hear anything from the Chief Minister about what's being done in response to that potential?
So the Economic Strategy Board was going to be meeting weekly now to monitor the situation. The Chief Minister says the island does have reserves and support mechanisms in place if needed, but he says he doesn't want to make any knee-jerk reactions when the full picture isn't yet known.
Christian, thank you very much indeed. Very briefly, Timwald's still ongoing at the moment.
Yes, it is. I've heard some speculation it could be finished today. I suspect not. I think it will be tomorrow afternoon.
OK, Christian, thank you very much indeed. 23 minutes past five. So it is a really big year in 2026 for the horse trams. A century and a half ago, the first tracks were laid along Douglas Promenade and tourists started doing what they have been doing with perhaps one or two interruptions ever since, trotting along the prom at one horsepower around the bay. But how best to celebrate this anniversary? Well, John Moss has a suggestion.
What you're looking for is something that will be memorable and fun. Peter Kelly of the Victorian Society certainly feels it should be a special occasion.
150 years ago, they dug the first sod. A little ceremony took place over the far end of the promenade. And within 2 months, I think, the tramway was there at incredible speed. And I have suggested that, in fact, even if they don't get going, which they won't because they'll have to have tenders and road closures and all sorts of things, that the least they could do, they've got this swathe of grass now going where the track is to go. And on the day, on the 150th, how nice it would be if they had somebody special to dig the first sod.
Okay, How about this idea? Celebrate by using something that's been appearing all the way along the promenade in the season for 150 years. We know when the trammers have been out and about because, well, they leave the evidence. At one time, they came up with the idea of jarred horse nappies. It was tried for a year, but, well, many turned their noses up at it. And like its cargo, it was dropped quickly. With the modern insatiable desire to have a flutter, use that to mark the occasion. Here's how you do it. Use chalk to make squares on the track between Derby Castle and Broadway. Draw in numbers, not in sequence, randomly, 1, 7, 54. Then invite one and all to buy a ticket. On the day, as the horse tram makes his or her way along, it's very likely they will at some stage feel the need to leave a present. Where it falls, that's the winning number. Everyone's a winner. It's a way of bringing the horses in on the celebration and starting the celebration with a bang. Well, more of a plop, actually.
I just love how John Moss's mind works. What do you reckon of that idea? I think it could be a goer. Sport here on Update is brought to you by The Print Shed. Here is Rob.
Fast am I. Well, starting with boxing, an Isle of Man professional boxer Sam Rennie has secured his second title belt following victory in his latest bout. The former New Horizon Boxing Club member claimed the vacant ANBF Australasian Super Featherweight title following a unanimous points win over Shamal Ram Anuj at the Thunderdome 53 event at Metro City in Northbridge, Australia. It's the second belt Rennie has won in less than a year, after he also secured the WBC Australasian Silver Super Featherweight crown in May 2025. Furthermore, this success also extends the Manxman's unbeaten professional record to 8 wins from all 8 bouts since his debut at this level in 2024. In motorsport, TT legend Ian Hutchinson will spearhead the charge of a team making its debut on the Snaefell Mountain course this year. The 16-time TT winner will represent the newly formed Team RST in the senior superbike and superstock races at the 2026 event. Along with being the 5th most successful rider in TT history, Hutchinson remains the only competitor to achieve 5 race victories in a week at the event back in 2010. Well, speaking on the move, the Yorkshireman says this project is very personal to him and that he still has that drive to prove they can compete at the very front. Separately this year, he'll compete for the Burroughs Engineering RK Racing Squad in both Supersport races. Elsewhere, the World Downhill Skateboarding Championships look set to return to the Isle of Man in 2026. After making its debut on the championship calendar last year, the island is currently scheduled to host round 2 of this year's series from Friday the 3rd of July to Sunday the 5th of July. In total, there are currently 5 rounds penned in for this year's championships, with the others due to take place across Turkey, the USA, Brazil and El Salvador. Full details of this year's Isle of Man course are yet to be revealed. However, organisers on social media have hinted that this year it could take place on a section of the Snaefell Mountain course near Ramsey. And finally, in football, the first midweek fixtures of the Manx season take place tonight. There's just the one tie, which will take place at Mulliner Chloe in the Canada Life Men's Premier League, as St John's United hosts Russian United at 7 p.m. The hosts have lost just one of their last 6 in all competitions, whilst Russian United could move at 1 place to 4th with a win this evening.
Rob, thank you very much indeed. I want to see you skateboarding on the TT course. Close roads, obviously, yeah?
Tell you what, that'd be some thrill, that, gotta say.
That really would, yeah. I'll get you a special helmet and everything. That is all from Update this evening. Coming up next, it's Countryside with Simon and Kiri tonight. They're talking about, amongst other things, sheep shearing competitions and Crufts. Then Chris Kinley will be here from 6 with Greatest Hits. At 9, it's The Folk Show with John Barker, and Dave Moore will be with you with After Hours from 10. Whatever you're doing this evening, have a good one. Update will be back at 5 tomorrow.